Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. This is episode number 138. My name is Camden Busey. I'm in Grays Lake, Illinois, and I'm flying solo today, not only in the studio, but no one connecting remotely. But we had 1 week off of Reform, well, basically 2 weeks off of Reformed Media Review. But last week on Thursday, the normal day that we've been releasing new episodes, we released a special episode of Reformed Theological Hot Ones. So if you don't know about that, head on over to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/reformedforum, or just pop onto the homepage of reformedforum.org and you can watch Lane Tipton and I eating 10 increasingly spicy hot wings while I ask him theological questions from the personal and the humorous all the way to the difficult and even some absurd. It's pretty nuts. So 26 minutes of wild chicken wing eating a la the Hot Ones show on YouTube. So you'll enjoy that. But I did want to get in and get back in the studio and discuss, some books. And at Reformed Media Review, we frequently like to keep you abreast of new titles. And I've been receiving several in the mail. Very thankful for the different publishers that are sending us review copies and other things to inspect. But once in a while, we like to describe books that are a little bit off the beaten path, or even perhaps books that have maybe been forgotten or even never known from the past. So today we want to speak about one by Murray Forst Thompson, Esquire. He's an attorney. The Auburn Betrayal. Now, this is a tiny little tract. It is published in this old series called Tracts for Today. It's the fourth one in that series. Other ones in the Tracts for Today series were Why the Orthodox Presbyterian Church by the Reverend John Patton Galbraith. He's been on the program before where we did a series. We talked about his life, Danny Olinger and I did, so I'll try to include a link to that in the episode description. Number two was The Covenant of Grace by the Reverend Calvin Knox Cummings. Then number three was Is the Bible Right About Jesus by none other than J. Gresham Machen. Number four is this title, The Auburn Betrayal by Murray Forst Thompson. And then number five was The Sovereignty of God by the Reverend John Murray. And it says that there were other titles in preparation. This was published by the Committee on Christian Education for the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. Don't have a specific date on this tract, but pretty hard to find. I found out about it. I'm going to talk a little bit about Murray Forst Thompson and the subject matter of this particular tract. But I was able to find a used copy. I think I found it through Abe Books, ABE Books. And definitely am thankful. Add it to my collection of American Presbyteriana, if that's the right word. So Murray Forst Thompson, who is that, and why ought you to care? Well, Mr. Thompson was a ruling elder at Calvary Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Glenside, Pennsylvania. He was an attorney, and he argued the case for the Presbyterian Church of America against the PCUSA in the latter suit regarding the new church's name. If you know anything about the history, the OPC was formed in 1936, but its first name was the Presbyterian Church of America. And the PCUSA, the mainline Presbyterian Church from which they came, they sued them. It took them to court over the name, saying it's too confusing, whatever. So it's my understanding, and I've been told, that Murray Forst Thompson was the attorney who argued that case unsuccessfully. But in the long run, I think it ended up being better not to have America in the title, my own personal take. But Orthodox Presbyterian Church certainly can be confusing regarding Eastern Orthodoxy. But Presbyterian Church of America was left behind in favor of Orthodox Presbyterian Church. Murray Forst Thompson was really the only co-signer to Cornelius Van Til in a minority report to the Committee of Eight, which I'll speak about in a second. It's generally understood that the minority report won the day at the General Assembly around 1942. What did I say, the Committee of Eight? I meant Committee of Nine. Well, the Committee of Nine was established in 1941 at the 8th General Assembly of the OPC, and they reported at the 9th General Assembly in 1942. Edwin Ryan and J. Oliver Buswell were members of this committee, And generally speaking, they sought something of a kind of a broader evangelical influence and a type of American Christian nationalism. And this group was representative of those who were wary of what they called the alien influence at Westminster Theological Seminary. So what was this alien influence? Well, by that, they meant the Dutch professors, which are Cornelius Van Til, Ned Stonehouse, and R.B. Kuyper, but also, to some extent, John Murray, that being a Scotsman, although they didn't have as much of a problem with him in, you know, being a barrier to the Christian nationalism they may have wanted to promote. So they felt that these professors were compromising their brand, or at least their vision for an American Presbyterianism, and as a result, they wanted to do something about it. So Cornelius Van Til was a member of this committee, along with Murray Forst Thompson, and they both filed and signed a minority report. And it's generally viewed in OP history that the minority report won the day on the assembly. So the other members of the committee were none too happy. So Murray Forst Thompson is sort of like Van Til's kind of right-hand man. A dear friend kind of likened him to Van Til's consigliere, without any of the bad connotations, of course. And he did a few things, one of which was write this tract. He also wrote another book or booklet, Have the Organizers of the Independent Board for Presbyterian Foreign Missions Violated the Law of the Presbyterian Church in the USA? And that was published in Philadelphia by the Independent Board for Presbyterian Foreign Missions. And then this book, of course, The Auburn Betrayal. So this book includes the full text of the famous Auburn Affirmation. The Auburn Affirmation was a document that was dated May 1924. It gets its name because of its first line, an affirmation designed to safeguard the unity and liberty of the Presbyterian Church in the United States of America. It was co-authored by 11 different people of a committee, and it was signed by 1,274 ministers in the PCUSA. All of them listed in the back of this tract. So Murray Forst Thompson talks about the history and really the significance of this document. He includes the full text of the document, and he includes all the names and the cities and the and states of all the people that signed it. What was this all about? Well, the Auburn Affirmation was a response to certain actions of the General Assembly. In 1910, 1916, and 1923, the General Assembly had declared that every candidate seeking to be ordained in the Presbyterian Church should affirm the five fundamentals. And these were the inerrancy of the Scriptures, the virgin birth, and the deity of Jesus, the doctrine of substitutionary atonement, the bodily resurrection of Jesus, and the authenticity of Christ's miracles. Some people raised a stink about this and did not appreciate the General Assembly requiring candidates for ministry, for ordination, to affirm these things, ostensibly because they were extra-confessional beliefs. And they said, well, we can't force people to affirm or subscribe to things that aren't the confession of faith, which are have constitutional status within the church. And so many were arguing a procedural or constitutional argument, or an argument on constitutional grounds. However, others saw it as an excuse for providing room for liberalism. So the question is, you know, should you be able to affirm these things? Well, most people, at least the conservatives, thought that if you affirm the standards, then you would, by definition, affirm these things as well. But there was some debate on that. And you definitely had people who couldn't affirm these things. There were some candidates for licensure, I believe, who were not able to affirm their belief in the virgin birth of our Lord Jesus Christ, which caused a big issue and raised the matter. So if you're interested in these types of things, and you're interested in early 20th century American Presbyterianism, This is a book that you would do well to get, if for no other reason than just its historical value in understanding what one side of the issue and an early member of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church thought about the Auburn Affirmation and what they sought to do about it. Also by recording in perpetuity, at least in this piece of paper, the signers of that document. I want to read a little bit of a section before I let you go. On page 12 of the tract, there's a heading, "The Questions Raised by the Affirmation." Thompson writes this: "The Auburn Affirmation attacked the evangelical deliverance of the General Assembly of 1923 on two grounds, grounds of by no means equal importance. First, it raised procedural and constitutional objections. These are comparatively unimportant in this discussion and will be dealt with briefly. Second, the affirmation assailed the doctrinal contents of the 5 points. It is this teaching of the affirmation which is of particular concern to Bible-believing Christians. The affirmation begins with a vigorous exposition of the liberty of thought and teaching of ministers of the Presbyterian Church in the USA, and challenges the power of the General Assembly to declare authoritatively what that church believes and teaches without concurrent action of the presbyteries. The affirmation also charges that the General Assembly of 1923 virtually pronounced a judgment against the First Presbyterian Church of New York without giving a hearing to the parties concerned, and with knowledge that the matter was already under formal consideration of the Presbytery of New York. These objections, of course, raise some interesting legal questions. The question whether the General Assembly had the power to specify essential doctrines of the church is a problem of absorbing interest to students of church government. In passing, we cannot refrain from observing that it is a great pity that the defenders of Dr. Fosdick and the critics of the General Assembly of 1923 did not, 10 years later, remember the principles of fair dealing and the limitations upon the power of the Assembly which they had asserted when in 1936 they disciplined Dr. J. Gresham Machen and some of his associates in the Independent Board for Foreign Missions on basis of an ex parte deliverance of the General Assembly of 1934. We are not concerned with such questions here. We are not now interested in the Auburn Affirmation as a treatise on ecclesiastical law, although many have been the attempts to persuade us that the affirmation has significance only from that point of view. The affirmationists did not stop with these legal questions. Had they wanted to confine their criticisms of the Assembly's action to its legal aspects, they could have done so. They might even have been content with the expression of their views as to the nature and effect of their ordination vows, solemn undertakings by which they had affirmed that they believed the scriptures of the Old and New Testaments to be the Word of God, the only infallible rule of faith and practice, and had received and adopted the confession of faith of this church as containing the system of doctrine taught in the Holy Scriptures. That would have been bad enough, considering the liberal views of subscription affirmationists hold, but they did not stop even there. They proceeded to something more fundamental. They launched into an attack upon the Bible and the very doctrines they had been ordained to preach." Did I whet your appetite? I want to read it again after reading that. So, Murray Forrest Thompson, very enjoyable tract, highly valuable as a piece of just an historic primary source, and one that includes the full text of the Auburn Affirmation. And if you ever want to dig through and see who signed it, I started looking through all the people in Illinois and trying to find all the old churches in different areas where I've lived and see if the ministers had signed the affirmation, and many of them had. So, again, the tract, the little booklet, "The Auburn Betrayal" by Murray Forrest Thompson, right-hand man, some would say, to Cornelius Van Til. It's not available anywhere. There's an entry on Google Books where you can get a copy, maybe. They don't have the full text of it there, although that would be nice. But you might be able to find excerpts of it online. But do as I did, and if you're really interested in it, take a look at ABE Books or maybe eBay, or put some sort of a web alert, and you might be able to dig it up at some point in the future. Anyway, we do want to thank you all for watching and listening. And I want to encourage you to tolerate, pick up and read.